Welcome to the Relocate Global and Think Global People podcast series on emerging trends in leadership. I'm absolutely delighted to have with me today Dr. Susan Shortland, who is going to enlighten us on some of the approaches and solutions that are available to leaders and global mobility professions in this sphere. I'm your host, Marianne Kerfey, and a writer for Relocate Global and Think Global People. I write about finance, technology, workplace culture, and diversity and inclusion. Susan is a senior lecturer in human resources management at the University of Westminster. Her career spans more than 40 years, during which time she's worked in both the private and the public sectors. She's a chartered fellow of the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development and a senior fellow of the Higher Education Academy. Prior to working in higher education, Sue worked in a managerial role in international human resources management consultancy at KPMG. Prior to this, she managed the CBI's Employee Relocation Council. Welcome, Sue.
Hi, Marianne.
So today we're talking about dual careers. And one of the issues around dual careers is that when one employee is offered an international assignment, often the working partner has to consider whether they're going to stay, whether they're going to remain behind, whether they're going to take the family with them or not. And if that partner is also employed, then accepting a posting is going to mean that either they've got to relinquish their job, they've got to think about where else and how else they're going to work. And it may be problematic when they first get to the new location if they can't get an appropriate work visa or they can't find a job of equivalent status or salary. And often this can lead to failed assignments or problematic assignments. And so today we're going to talk about dual careers and how global mobility professionals can ensure that the talent that they're sending abroad is supported in terms of both themselves, their family, and their partners. So Sue and I are going to unpick some of these themes today. And I suppose the first question really that we need to tackle is what we actually mean by a dual career in a mobility context. So Sue, what are your thoughts on this?
Yes, I mean, the thing is today is most couples have got two incomes, so it's normal that most couples would work. But when organisations are relocating professional people, it's normal for professional people or usual for professional people to be partnered or married to other professionals. So what that actually means is it's not only about the loss or potential loss of a second income, which could be a substantial income, but it's also about that person having to consider how they are going to be able to manage their career progression and the growth that comes from a satisfying job. So I think it's important to actually recognise that in a dual career couple, each partner is going to be highly qualified. And their sort of, driving force, as it were, is to pursue their own individual career goals. And that, of course, is the problem. If one person is asked to relocate with their employer and the partner, doesn't have a supported move in the same way by their own company or their own organisation.
So is there a kind of legacy issue here in that maybe 10 or 20 years ago, an assignment was about an individual going and taking their partner with them? And there was also that kind of expression, the trailing spouse, as though the spouse or the partner wasn't really expected to have to work. Is there a change now in the way that dual careers have developed, that there's a kind of mismatch between maybe what some in the global mobility industry have been used to and what's actually happening now?
Well, I think this has been a problem for decades, to be honest. I mean, traditional expatriates were sort of married men who had a trailing wife and took children with them on assignment. But assignments and the people who undertake them, just it doesn't really look like that anymore. So I think this idea of the so-called trailing spouse, which personally I think is a dreadful expression.
A terrible expression.
I think we should be not try not to use that one. But yeah. I think the issue about somebody who is forced to follow was more something of the decades of the sort of, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, yeah. in sort of yeah. those kind of industries and careers in those days, where expatriation was primarily in things like, I don't know, you know, the oil industry and diplomatic service and so on and so forth. But today, more and more organizations in a much wider spectrum of fields are relocating people abroad, and the people that they're moving are likely to be in these dual income, dual career partnerships. So I think the issue is it's been a problem for many decades. Certainly when I was running the Employee Relocation Council, so that was in the mid-80s onwards, this was a problem for employers then. So it's certainly not new, but it's a problem that hasn't really gone away.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Why do you think it's now perhaps that it's more common that the income and the career satisfaction of both parties is becoming more important? Do we have different expectations post-COVID? Is it the fact that people view their work-life balance and what goes on outside work as equally important as their career development? Why do you think this kind of focus on career satisfaction for both parties has really come to the fore?
I think it's probably that people are potentially more independent. They're not necessarily relying for their family life to just be governed by one partner in the relationship. People expect to have independence, and they expect to have their own career growth and career satisfaction. I don't think it's necessarily anything that's different post-COVID. But there's also a generational thing that younger generations certainly see the working environment differently. You know, they expect to be able to move from one employer to another to further their careers. They expect to have good work-life balance, as you mentioned, but they expect to be able to pursue their own endeavors as well. So I think there is a generational change, but I think that has been progressing for over several decades, as I said.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you. So what about the kind of personal challenges and pitfalls that couples have when they're contemplating an international assignment? So let's take it from the sort of the very first step, which is one part of the couple is invited to apply or is asked if they would be interested in an international assignment. What kind of happens there in the background for couples, and what kind of negotiations have to take place?
I think couples have to discuss what's in their best interest, not only for them as a couple, but for them individually as well. And then they need to make decisions about whether or how they can actually approach that assignment offer. So, for example, the choices typically are going to be that both partners in the couple move together, in which case, what are the job opportunities and career opportunities for the person who is not the employed partner? Is it possible that individual is able to get a job with another employer locally that is in the same industry or in their same sort of career trajectory? Alternatively, if they move, is it possible that they can accompany their working partner but continue to work for their current employer by working remotely? That's certainly worth considering.
Yes, that's an interesting option. Yes.
Yeah, it's another option. Then, of course, you don't necessarily have to relocate together. So there could be a decision taken that one partner accepts the move, the other person stays in the home country to continue with their own career, and they set up some sort of long distance or international commuting type arrangement. But the drawback with that is it's actually quite stressful. It's tiring, and it disrupts family relationships. So it sounds as if it's a perfect option, but actually it tends to cause quite a lot of distress in a way, because it's a lot of travel, it's a lot of moving around, and of course the days when flying was glamorous is long gone, I'm afraid. It becomes quite hard work, and it's, you know, let's put it like this, planes are never early, are they? It does mean that it does put a lot of stress on the couple if they decide to split in order to pursue their careers individually, and then find ways and means of reconnecting to keep their relationship alive.
So there's a potential there for some unhappiness. It could be that if there's not enough support there for the partner or the spouse, then it could lead to a failed assignment. So on a personal level, there are some challenges there. But what about the challenges for the employer, because obviously it costs quite a lot of money to move an individual or a family, and trying to ensure that the assignment is as successful as possible is both a kind of business case imperative, but also a cost one too, isn't it? So what are the risks to the employer if they don't really from the very beginning support the individual and their family?
Well, I think the thing is if the decision to undertake an assignment with both partners going and one of them is unable to work, it could lead to that partner being quite sort of angry and bitter and unhappy. And an employer might say, well, so what? I only employ the employee. I don't employ the partner. But the issue is when the employee goes home and they've got a very unhappy partner, it makes their life unhappy. And, you know, they carry that into the workplace. It will affect their productivity and they're not necessarily going to achieve the performance outcomes that that employer might want. The other option, of course, is if they split and you've got one partner in the home country and one partner in the host country, you could argue, well, that's OK, because that's high productivity. The employee is there in the host country. He or she has got nothing better to do than work, work, work. So good high productivity. But actually, the separation causes loneliness. It causes stress. And then, as I said before, the commuting to and fro becomes very tiring. So again, if that starts causing relationship issues between the partners in the couple, the employee effectively brings that sort of into the workplace and it will affect their productivity. So you've got to provide some sort of support for this, because otherwise the chances of a failed assignment become quite high. And as a result of that, then you've got that cost issue falling on the employer. The only other thing I would add to that is, of course, it's about talent and it's about selection of the right person. And if the best person for the job is in a dual career couple, the employer has to find some way to try and make this work, because otherwise it's going to be, you know, they're not going to get the right talent that they want for the position.
So do you think these types of conversations are taking place early enough with employees? Do you think employers are aware of what a kind of critical imperative is there to make sure that the assignment works for both of the dual career professional couple?
Probably not, if I'm honest with you, but that's because I think that a lot of assignments are not necessarily career pathed or planned. Many of them are decided upon quite late on, and there is a, you know, expediency. You've got to get somebody into that role. You've got to do it quickly. And the identification of the talent is done quite quickly in terms of relation to the timescale of having to undertake the move. So I suspect that the conversations that should be taking place or could be taking place are not necessarily there. That said, a lot of companies, particularly large organizations, do have career path succession planning systems in place, and they enable employees as part of their development reviews to propose whether they are willing to undertake an international assignment or not. And one would hope that if employees put forward their name to undertake such a posting, that they have hopefully discussed it with their partner first. But of course, I can't really guarantee that either. Yeah. So it's a little difficult to answer that question realistically, yeah. I think.
Yeah, yeah, good point. So I'm thinking about what's involved in supporting a dual career. And actually, I take your point about how it's really important in terms of productivity and happiness for both parties that it works. But I'm thinking of taking a step back now and thinking about it from the employer's point of view. It would cost a lot, wouldn't it? I mean, you've got to organise their working visa potentially for the part of the partnership that is not employed by you as an employer. You might need to support them in looking for employment opportunities, cultural language training, supporting them once they're there. I mean, do these costs, which can be quite significant, outweigh the benefits? Or is it so important that this works that, you know, employers just need to understand why and how they can support these individuals and their partners?
Well, first of all, I think I take issue with the fact that this is expensive, because I don't think it needs to be. In terms of issues to do with work permit and visas, what I think couples are looking for is they're looking for the support in terms of how they go about getting these things. So for employers, they, they normally have, they've got this in place for their own employees. It isn't that much extra work if it's possible to get a visa for the accompanying spouse. But of course, that might not always be possible. We have to accept that. And it might mean that the spouse has got to find work in their own right in some countries. But here, employers aren't really expected to, you know, provide the jobs for them. But they often have contacts through their networks of other employers locally who potentially might be willing or able and have vacancies that are appropriate for the relocating partner. So that's really about communication. That doesn't necessarily have to cost a lot of money. You mentioned sort of cultural and language training, but typically organizations provide cultural and language training for both the employee and the partner when the employee is going abroad. And the reason they do that is because whether these spouse or partner is working or not working, they have to be able to attune culturally. They have to be able to adjust, because if they're not able to do that, it's unlikely that they will settle and the assignment will succeed. So in a sense, providing the cultural training or the language training in addition to assist partners who would want to work is not that much of an additional cost. They're probably doing that anyway. Now, I would just make the point, though, that obviously you're not necessarily going to provide language training to ensure fluency. And in some countries, you do have to be fluent in the language if you're going to compete in the job market. And again, I don't think that's necessarily something that employers have to take on board. But, you know, at least putting the working partner on the starting ladder of this with some language training, and then putting them in touch with providers who can potentially take that forward in the host country could be a support intervention that's valuable. Doesn't necessarily mean that employers have to pay for every single bit of it.
Yeah. So again, that suggests it comes back to planning, in that if employers can be more strategic and get their talent pipeline organised, then it gives the individual who's being sent abroad and their partner time to adjust, to learn a language, because you can't learn a language in a couple of weeks, really, effectively, can you? So giving employees the opportunity to plan so that they know what they're doing and when they're moving, and it's not such a scramble as you described, which sometimes happens.
Yeah, indeed.
So I'm wondering, what are the benefits of supporting the partner or spouse, as well as the assignee? I mean, there's a number of different ones that you've mentioned, but I wonder if we could sort of look at those in a bit more detail. So the talent management, the human capital, the business case, the failed assignment. I mean, can you sort of summarize why this is beneficial and why employers need to stop thinking about it as a cost issue and more of a business case, really?
Well, I think the main thing is it's going to widen the candidate pool for your sort of recruitment and selection processes. So I think that's important. I think it's also going to provide, you know, a basis for more motivation and engagement by your employees, because if their families are taken care of, then they tend to be more productive and more positive as well. So I think there's a lot of factors here that employers need to consider, and they need to weigh up the cost of, you know, the support that they're going to give, which, as I say, doesn't have to be huge. No one's expecting employers to replace lost income, for example. They've got to weigh up the costs against the potential benefits. And I think the potential benefits are, you know, summed up in the wider talent pool and the fact that employees are more likely to complete their assignments successfully and their productivity is likely to be improved.
So you're widening the talent pool, you're increasing diversity and inclusion in the organisation, you're giving benefits and opportunities to individuals who might not have put themselves forward because they didn't think that they would be supported, or they didn't think they'd be able to persuade their spouse. So that does sound very positive. So is there anything that, say, an employer is listening to this podcast now and they're thinking, actually, yes, I need to start to put some blocks in place to support the partners, and we haven't really got that facility at the moment. What are the kind of starting points, and what do they need to be thinking about?
Well, I think the first thing is think if it's at all possible to plan the assignments with more time, then that is helpful. I appreciate that's not always going to be possible, but it is more helpful for individuals to and their families to be able to move if there's a little more time involved in the process. If you don't have anything like a succession planning scheme, then maybe that's something to consider, sort of looking at career paths for your key talent. That's worth certainly putting into place. A lot of organizations will have performance management reviews, but they might not have development reviews. So the idea of having development reviews where employees might want to undertake international assignments or gain international experience, and they can, you know, log on to like a database and record when they're able to move and the places they might be able to move to. That could be helpful for planning as well. And then I think it's worth actually employers, if they want to start thinking about just some support that they could give, to think about their networks with other employers in the locations where they're operating, because it's certainly not unusual for companies to, if you like, employ each other's working partners or spouses. It's not unusual to see that happening. So are there local employers or job clubs that they could become involved with? And then think about where they might actually source help and information, like, you know, how to write your CV in a different country, because all countries do it a bit differently. So, you know, some support there from service companies or providers that might be able to provide training in terms of CV preparation, interview training, that kind of thing. Another option, of course, is to link the partners and spouses as well directly into networking groups. And in a lot of expatriate communities, there are these groups available, and information on job opportunities can come by networking. So the spouses or the partners are doing the networking themselves. So again, linking into those kind of support networks is helpful.
That's fantastic. Lots of really practical steps there, and also some interesting and sort of innovative ideas. So thank you, Sue. Really appreciate that. And thank you so much for sharing your time with me today. I hope that it's been really useful for our listeners. We have a series of podcasts on international leadership, global mobility and emerging trends. So do check out the other podcasts in this series. Thank you, Sue, so much for joining me today. And I hope to speak to you again soon.